You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Joining me now is Kellen Becoats. He is an associate producer at Sports Illustrated, and like me and all the best people in the world, he's an Ohio Bobcat. Kellen, what's going on?
Nothing. I appreciate the Ohio Bobcat comment because everybody knows that the best people are Bobcats.
Look, Tony Campbell's in the G League now. We're starting to make it. He's not playing yet, but like because Adrian Payne was involved in that scandal, he's probably going to play for the Lakeland Magic, and things are looking up for the Ohio Bobcats. And Treg Seti's like still singing on Instagram. And if you know who Treg Seti is and you're listening to this podcast, like, at me, bro. But we're here to talk about the Cavs, but we're also going to talk about the big breaking news that happened in the NBA on Monday. That is, of course, Blake Griffin being traded to the Detroit Pistons for Tobias Harris, for Avery Bradley, for some picks. I'm missing some of the other pieces. I think there's a couple things going from the Clippers as well, but the big story of this is obviously the Pistons getting Blake Griffin, pairing him with DeAndre Jordan, pairing him with Reggie Jackson when Reggie Jackson comes back, and the Clippers hitting a reset button and to some degree probably going to trade DeAndre and Lou Williams now. Kellen, what was your initial reaction to this trade that I don't think anyone really could have saw coming?
So it was really strange because I was at the grocery store when I just felt my phone buzzing, and I was just like, this is weird. Like, it's 6 p.m. on a Monday. Nothing could possibly be going on in the NBA. And I looked down, and Blake Griffin is all of a sudden traded. I had heard a couple things about Avery Bradley potentially being involved in the trade block, but I didn't think that, one, the Pistons would actually do it. Not more so because they've been kind of floundering in the past couple weeks, but more so because he's got the expiring contract. If you want something out of that. But I didn't think they would get Blake Griffin. I certainly didn't think after the whole thing that the Clippers did over the summer where they basically enticed him and said, you could be a Clipper for life and you could be the person that we show on like every presentation for free agents and say, hey, we want to entice you here because Blake Griffin is here. He's going to be a Clipper for life. You can look forward to playing with him and things like that. And then after they signed him to his mega deal, they sent him to Detroit. It just seems like a very interesting deal to make. I understand why Detroit wanted to get rid of, excuse me, some of the things that they got rid of, but it's just weird that it's happening now.
Especially because you, like you said, there was that big pitch for Blake that they put his jersey in the rafters and said, you know, we want you to be that guy. And then they trade him 6 months later. And there's that stand-up bit that Blake did that's been going around of, like, him making the joke about guys just getting traded to random cities. And now he's going to a team that he never took a meeting with. That I think we can kind of assume and kind of read into that he never really had interest in. And for me, the thing it signals is that the Pistons are probably trying to not only sell tickets for that arena, but they're trying to just win right now and do something. What do you think of the Drummond Blake pairing? Like, do you think it's actually gonna turn into something?
I just think it's interesting. Blake obviously improved his jump shot, and definitely improved as a pass from years past. So they could form a pretty interesting front court dynamic. I just think that the time is interesting. I mean, clearly, as we're going through the whole, it kind of opens up a little spot in the Eastern Conference and the Eastern Conference dominance. So if they could really get them hitting the ground running and they could really get Detroit's offense back into the top 15, top 10, then I think it could be potentially dangerous to other Eastern Conference teams. But if LeBron's going to stay in the Eastern Conference for the rest of his career, I just don't really see how this works.
I think the other concern, too, is you have to wonder about Blake's health. It's not like Blake has ever been a perfect health guy every year. He gets hurt. He wears down. He doesn't look necessarily as explosive as he was. And when you have the Reggie Jackson injury concerns, you know, I think that becomes, you know, even more of some different issues. That's some really, I think problematic things to maybe consider if you're the Pistons. You have to, I think, do it because you have to go for something like this if you get the chance. And it's not like they gave up a lot, like their own pick. You know, it could be like a decent guy, but it's not likely to be a star. It's top four protected. So if they bought him out for whatever reason, they're at least protected there. through 2020 or something like that. Avery Bradley, they're already talking about trading him because he's going to walk. Tobias Harris is the definition of average in a lot of ways. This team did not give up a lot for Blake Griffin, so I like it for them. For the Clippers, I think if we're looking at the team I cover, the Cavs, what this actually could affect them, because I think it does sort of signal that we're probably getting a DeAndre trade. It may be Lou Williams trade. But, I mean, Kellen, A, do you agree with that just kind of general assessment there? And where would you like to see either one of those guys go? Or where do you have destinations in mind that you think could make sense for one or both of those players?
Gosh. I mean, there's been so many speculative things. I think for DJ, he has to be clearly that has a lot of shooters because that's something he's limited in. He has to have a good point guard to play with so he can facilitate a lot of his offense. I think an interesting place for DeAndre to go would maybe be Portland, with Nurkic not particularly doing as well as he did at the end of last season and him being out of contract at the end of the year. I think that could be interesting. For Lou Will, I mean, he's an unconscious scorer, but he's a big scorer. So where are you really going to send him where he's going to be able to make an immediate impact? He's not really going to get lost in the shuffle. If you send him to maybe, and I seriously can't imagine this, but I think it would be really interesting if they send him to maybe like the Spurs or something. Got him in Pop system. I would love to see how that worked out, but I don't really know a contender that needs that much spot up shooting, that much off their bench, that doesn't already have it and isn't already in conversation.
Yeah, I don't think there's necessarily a contender that needs Lou Will, but I think like the Wizards could use Lou Will. I look at like the, but they're also a team that I would say, if you're looking at the teams in the East, they're maybe fourth or probably fourth in terms of the teams we'd expect to kind of contend. John Wall hasn't had a great year. He wouldn't solve all their issues, but he would make sense. And DeAndre's interesting because he's not someone that I think helps every team, right? Like he's not. You know, he's not a unicorn like Embiid or Towns or any of those guys, but he's a good defender. He can catch lobs, but you're right, he needs all the shooting. So I think, like, you know, you kind of have to have him in a situation where that can make sense. And if you're the Cavs, I think you could talk yourself into it. But I don't think he necessarily solves all your issues against Golden State. Like, I think there's a track record with him and with bigs playing against the Warriors that I don't know if he ends up making, what kind of difference he ends up making. For the Cavs, let's say he ends up from the Cavs and it's something like the Channing Frye, Amon Shumpert pick deal that apparently they were on the 1 yard line of giving up for George Hill. If let's say it's that and they get DeAndre in, I don't know if he's like changing their trajectory in any meaningful way. And that's not a slight on DeAndre. It's just I just don't know what he does in this NBA changes you that much or solves all of their many defensive issues.
It just seems very strange. I thought beginning of the season that the Clippers should blow it up, and they didn't immediately do so. I thought, maybe they're going to try and compete. And then for the first couple of weeks of the season, we thought, oh, the Clippers are really good. Blake Griffin's playing like maybe fourth or fifth pick for MVP. Like, oh, this is going to be great. And then Blake Griffin goes down and say, okay, they're going to tank. And then they kind of just scoot around in like the 8 to 10 range. You're not really sure where they're going, and again, they're kind of in that lower half of the West, and they're almost looking like they're going to try and compete for a lower seed in the Western Conference playoffs. Now they do this, so it's just a very strange time to be a Clippers fan. Sorry to fans also.
Yeah, it's just a weird time to be like an NBA fan, because I think we're going through some very weird point in the season. You're having Jason Kidd getting fired. You're having this trade that comes out of nowhere. We're not even really like that close to the deadline yet. We still have it's next week. We still have a lot that could happen. You have you even just have that Pelicans fan faking that he was a player and getting on the court. Like, there's just a lot of weird stuff. There's a lot of weird stuff right now, and that shout out to that guy. Like, just living the life, put on the hoodie, like that. That hoodie is like $100-something hoodie, and the pants are like over $100. So he like had to pay for that.
Not to mention the courtside seats. Like, yeah, if you're going to go that far in, you should get at least 2 shots.
Oh yeah, like I think he should have got like a pass from Anthony Davis or something like that too. Like, I think he should have, like, they should have just like played along. I think it would have been funny if they would have played along with it instead of this like security guard like busting his night up. The NBA, never boring. I called a friend who I will not name, that's a mutual friend of ours that also is a sports writer at Ohio University, that is a Pistons fan, when this trade happened. Shots to Chop. And we were talking about this, and there's just no sport or league that has this much drama and this much just, I think, absurdity. Like, Kellen, I can't think of like a, and it's partially because I just don't care as much about baseball, and as a soccer fan and a Premier League fan, like the trade sagas are less, they're much more gossipy than some what we get in the NBA. Although like the Woj stuff does certainly borders on gossip columns sometimes, but like there's nothing like this that I think can come up in the sport. I think it's in my mind, it's one of like the reasons the sport's so fun to follow.
Like, in what other league do you have Matt Barnes taking to Instagram to not essentially subtweet the Clippers, but basically just call them out and call them a franchise and call out Doc Rivers after he is retired at 6 p.m. on a Monday in, like, not necessarily the dead of winter, but, like, in late January? Like, you can't relax. Again, I was at the store, and I was just like, nothing's going to go on. Like, I'm just going to go home this day, it'll be fine. And I looked down, and Blake Griffin is getting traded to Detroit. So, like, this league never sleeps. It never stops. It is fantastic.
It is fantastic. And speaking of things that don't stop, the Cavs are the never-ending ball of drama in the NBA. They are winners of two straight right now, heading into a Tuesday game against the Detroit Pistons. Dwayne Wade will be back, so they'll have their full roster of players. But the big drama right now surrounds Isaiah Thomas. And I think if I didn't pot after the game on Saturday, but he had a 10-point third quarter in their win, but sat the whole fourth. He was the last player to talk in the locker room after LeBron, which is, I think, the first time that's happened all season, the first time that I've ever been to a game where LeBron didn't talk last, and he just kind of waited, kind of grumpy with some of the questions about what had happened. His quote about the playing was, "What do you want me to say? I'm just glad we won," was what he said when asked if he cared, basically, if he sat the fourth quarter. And things are a little bit tense with him, and I'll put it in the show notes, but the scrum he had on Saturday is one of the most fascinating, the only post-practice scrum that is must-watch interviews. They're just not normally that exciting, as Colin, I'm sure, can attest to, but this was fascinating. And like this team is just has all this drama. Kellen, they get Isaiah back. They're doing all these lineup changes. They're bad on defense. They're maybe probably going to do a bunch of trades. What to you stands out with this Cavs team, right? Like, what to you is like the thing that you're like, this is the part of this team that just fascinates me the most?
Well, just to go back to what you started with, it's incredible that a guy that we were talking about, he was the king in the fourth last season. We were printing out shirts and saying that it was IT time. And he was, I believe, the NBA season scorer in the fourth quarter for a good period of time. Now he's being thrown and stapled to the bench in the fourth quarter for the Cavs. So, like, it's just a very interesting story arc that Isaiah Thomas has had, from being Mr. Irrelevant, picking draft, and then moving through all these teams, really finding his niche in Boston, and then being traded to, we all basically figured, so watching the Cavs struggle integrate. Storm and lead athletic today. Like, it's seriously time to start evaluating Isaiah Thomas's contract and seeing what the Cavs are going to do with him next year. And personally, coming into the season, I thought, okay, T's going to come back a little bit after Christmas. The Cavs haven't seriously struggled integrating makes pitches in the past, at least not for a super long period of time. And even if they have, they've always gone to the finals when LeBron has been there. So I just didn't really see this coming, and just kind of watching it all fall apart and watching their defense be as bad as it is, it's fascinating to me. It's fascinating watching somebody, it'll take like two actions, and one of the opposing team will get to the rack, or like get an easy layup, or get an easy shot, and just watching all the faces on the cast just kind of subliminally blame each other, like, I'm sure you can go there. What? We're going to help. I thought you were on the weak side. It's really incredible that a team we all think is going to the final, bad on defense, bad at communication, and three is this bad this far into the season when we're kind of used to them starting to pick it up.
Yeah, it is. It's bizarre. And when you look at the Thomas thing, you're right. Like, it's someone that you think that should have come back, and then but he is coming off this hip, and you know it seems like he is struggling more with the hip than maybe Kyrie did coming back from that knee injury. And I don't, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, fair to, you know, it's definitely not fair to, you know, it's not fair to Isaiah and Kyrie to compare their injuries, but it's like a thing in the sense that, like, that's how we're going to compare it. Like, whether it's necessarily fair or not, I think we're going to look at this and be kind of wondering, like, you know, what does it mean that Isaiah Thomas could not come back like this? And, like, you know, there's still time for him to get better, but I don't know if you bet on it right now. And I think if you just look at everything that's happened with him, he's not exactly ever played well. Like, this is not a guy who has had a good... So Isaiah is, like, in this position where he had... But it's, like, weird because he had this really good game on Saturday where he looked more comfortable and did some explosive stuff and had a 10-point third quarter. And it's, like... The justification Tyronn Lue gave for not playing him in the fourth was this lineup that he had, which was Korver, LeBron, Jay Crowder, Channing Frye, and I'm forgetting the fifth guy, but I think Jeff Green to start. Yeah, it was Jeff Green to start, but it played, which is nuts that Jeff Green's like having like a good year and it's been like a success story. But another just dumb thing about the NBA, but. Like, that lineup was good, and he just didn't want to disrupt the rhythm. And so, like, the adjustments he made in putting in J.R. Smith and putting in Kevin Love sort of just fit in with what that lineup had been doing. And so I get that, but at the same time, it's – you're right. It's very weird to see this guy who we know from last year would point to his wrist. It was like, this is my time. I am the king in the fourth. Like, that, like he was – that was his thing last year. And now it's in one of his first games back in a close game where he just played really well, then he just sat. That's it's really weird that that's the world we're living in.
Like, in what time period does Jeff Green get more minutes than Isaiah Thomas in the fourth quarter? What year is it? So, like, I don't know. It's just something that is another interesting subplot of this Cavs team. Like, there's just so much finger-pointing, there's so many team meetings, there's so many anonymous sources that it's just like, I don't understand why when you have this much collective talent, why you can't just be like, all right, I understand, but like, you're pissed off. But look, if we do this right, we're going to ride one of the three great players of all time to another finals appearance. I know you haven't experienced that, whatever. Let's just do it. Everybody just shut up and let's just try and make it to June and we'll see what happens then. But for now, like, let's stop blaming each other. Let's stop causing drama in the locker room and let's see what we can do here. And that just hasn't happened. The metaphorical switch hasn't been flipped yet. And I just don't see how they're going to be taken seriously outside of LeBron.
What do you actually think of this Cavs team right now? With all of the issues they're having, but looking a little bit better lately with IT coming back, the trade deadline looming. Where do you think this team is actually at right now? Where do you see this team is being right now as we're getting closer to January?
Every part of me, and I try and filter everything as I say this, but are we doing this again with the Raptors? Where we're saying, okay, like the Raptors, seriously, guys, this year the Raptors have a chance of making the NBA Finals. I just, like, I love the Raptors. I love Toronto, great city, Canada, awesome country. But, like, guys, if you guys can't get it together in the playoffs again, we just can't take you seriously. And they've looked fantastic this year. I think OG Anunoby has been incredible, and I definitely didn't expect this when they drafted him. But I just can't. I really just can't see them getting past the Cavs. And for the Celtics, I mean, they're the number one seed. They were the number one seed last year. But I just don't think they have enough offensive firepower to really get through a Cavs series. So I find myself in this place again where the Cavs have a bottom three defense. They almost have the worst defense in the league if they don't by now. And it's just like, if the Cavs make it to the finals again this year, still toting one of the worst defenses in the league and really riding LeBron alongside the oldest roster in the NBA, you have to take a very serious look at the Eastern Conference and the would-be contenders and be like, okay, I understand that you did this move and this move and this move to try and compete, but when it comes down to it, if you can't beat this Cavs team in the playoffs, I don't really know what you're competing with. And if LeBron decides to stay and he re-ups with the Cavs for however many years, because we know he's probably not going to sign a long-term deal, then how are you going to beat this team if you can't beat this year's iteration of it with this much drama, this much bad defense, this much finger-pointing, and this much, like, their starting point guard, arguably right now, could be Jose Calderon. And, like, you just...
Don't knock my large Spanish adult son, okay? Do not knock him, the legend Jose Calderon.
Like, you have Isaiah Thomas, you have Derrick Rose for all that turns out to be, and you have Jose Calderon, and your most viable starting option at point guard could be Jose Calderon. That is incredible to me.
Yeah, it's not great. The East is interesting because, like, you look at Boston and they've been really good, and I think Toronto has generally been better, but there's reason to doubt Toronto. There's reason to, I think, doubt the Wizards. We'll see about the Celtics. Kyrie, you know, has been good, and Horford's been very good, and Tatum and Jaylen Brown have both been really good. This Cavs team just has so many issues that I just wonder if they're real. But we're getting to a point where, like, I don't know how much we can or it's fair to read into this, but Callum, we'll wrap it up on this. They have a little bit of time until the trade deadline. We're a little bit over a week to the deadline. Do you feel like they have to do something significant right now? They have these issues. You kind of lined out how the East could still kind of be theirs if things kind of break right, and we just go back to not being trash in a lot of ways. But do you feel like they have to do something between now and next Thursday?
I just don't really see how they get something and don't give something else up in return, which obviously is how trades work. But I really don't see how if they're really going to pursue George Hill, how he fits on this team. His defense has taken a nosedive this year in Sacramento, so I don't know how much that helps you. If you really want to pursue DJ, great. But his defense has also not been that great this year, and I don't see how he helps you get past the ultimate milestone of beating the Warriors. So I really don't know who they can pursue that would greatly improve their situation. There's a bunch of, like, mid-level names out there that, like, could be interesting. I know that, like, a few people were floating out Charlotte Hornets trade ideas last week, but I just don't see how, even if you bring in, like, Kemba and Nicholas Batum, and Nicholas Batum is a big wing who can defend in hypothetical situations, I really don't understand how much that helps you.
I agree. I wonder if they just have to ride with this, and I think they probably have to. There is certain stuff with this team where I think they can't improve on it unless they're just going to do everything and go all in on certain things. I mean, you saw my tweet on Monday about this article, this ESPN thing that came out suggesting, you know, they trade, like, the Nets pick in a deal with Kevin Love and wanted to get Robin Lopez and Nikola Mirotic. Like, I think that's a bad use of the, A, your man Chris Monday freaking eats jelly and mayo sandwiches. Number two, yeah, we're going there. Can't shake it. Number two, that's a really bad use of the Nets pick. Even if it's not a top three pick, it's still a lottery pick. And number two, like, that just underrates Kevin Love. And, like, I don't think Robin Lopez in the modern NBA is helping you against the Warriors. And I'm not sure Nikola Mirotic is, like, actually that good at basketball. So, like, I just don't think these things, like, those type of moves aren't going to do anything. And I don't know if I'm right, but my gut tells me that in a year and 6 months from now, when we're looking back on this and we have to respect on whatever LeBron does, what the Cavs do and how next summer shakes out, I think we're going to look a lot back at that, the trades that they couldn't get Paul George and Eric Bledsoe, couldn't retool that way. Maybe get Jimmy Butler was the other name kind of out there before he ended up in Minnesota. I think that's what we're going to look at, is that was the Cavs' chance to kind of retool in another. And for now, it's just kind of hard because it just becomes so hard to do when there's not that many guys that are available. And, like, I know some people will be like, they should have got Blake Griffin, but Blake Griffin, I don't know if necessarily if it's that category. I think Paul George was kind of the guy if you're going to do that.
And then very quickly, and I will let you wrap this up, but think about where we are now, where Nico literally couldn't start the season because he got punched in the face by Bobby Portis. And now ESPN is running articles saying, hey, you can viably trade the Brooklyn pick in Kevin Love to Chicago for Nikola Mirotic and Robin Lopez. What a world. What a league.
What a league. Last, Kellen, we'll wrap up on this. Which one would you rather have, jelly and mayo or orange juice and Oreos?
Okay, first off, there's no possible way I'm eating a jelly and mayo sandwich. Let's knock that off the table immediately. I'm not eating mayonnaise, I'm not eating a jelly sandwich, and I'm certainly not combining the two. Orange juice and Oreos, while it's odd, I can still see myself, like, if I didn't have anything else in the house, which I very rarely do, I could be like, yeah, like, I don't have any milk or whatever, like, I'll eat some orange juice and Oreos, like, it's gonna taste like crap, but maybe this will be fine. I'm not eating a jelly and mayo sandwich. That is something that, like, Satan invented. And it was just like, Nico, you're knocked out and have a concussion. Have this. And he woke up with his face broken. It was just like, that sounds delicious.
Yeah, I have questions. I feel like that might be it might have been a gag, but it's still the grossest thing I've ever seen, even if it's a gag. And Callan, do you have any takes on the and per ESPN? Whoever wins the All-Star game, they get each play. I think it's each player gets $100,000. Will that actually help the competitive nature of the All-Star game?
I don't think this is like a hot take. I don't think the money has anything to do with why people don't care about the All-Star game, specifically the players. I think it has more to do with like guys don't want to get injured. They don't want to go all out. While a lot of players try and put on a front, like these are their friends. It's like if I saw you and I was just like, Chris, like, I don't know how much money is a lot of money to us, but if I was like
$100,000 to young media professionals is gold. Like I would do things
like
right there. Yeah.
Won the lottery.
Yeah.
Like, so I couldn't come up to you and be like, I bet you $1,000 I could beat you in 1-on-1.
I bet you a dollar. Bet you a cup of coffee.
Like, we both look at each other and be like, we're not really gonna give each other $1,000 if the other one.
No.
So, like, I just don't think that money is going to, like, solve this. And while the draft, hashtag televised the draft, was interesting, I think it really is going to lead us down a path where the All-Star game is actually going to be cool. It's probably never going to be hyper-competitive, but it may be semi-competitive, if only for pride. And I really wish they had let Russell Westbrook believe that he got picked last. Because if he had believed that, he would have dropped, like, 80. And it would have been fantastic.
Look, LeBron needs to lie and tell him he picked him last. Like that's what I would do. I would tell him that he picked him last, that Kevin Love went well before him, and that Steph said he was a bad player. That was what I would do if I was LeBron. 100% what I would do. I'd fuel the fire. And I also think Joel Embiid's gonna like make a big deal about this $100. That's my only like safe bet on this. Like Joe and
also shout out LeBron not being able to spell, because I believe spelled Russ's name Westbrook, and I think he also misspelled Kristaps' name.
Look, LeBron's had some moments this year that, like, I don't know what's going on. Like, at one point he was blaring that new Eminem album in his locker, and I was just like, LeBron, you're too good for this. Like, this is a bad album, and he like knew the words, like some of the words, and I just was confused. Like I was just confused. And like the other night, he played Culture too. So it, like right when it came out, so at least like then I was like, okay, you know, like I can mess with this. But like, why the Eminem album? You know.
And then he listened to all of Culture too, and he was like, this was a mistake.
I think it was like the Apple Music plug was like, you have to like, can you like, you know, plug this Eminem album?
Can you promote these guys' songs? Like he's a SoundCloud like producer. Give these into the world.
Yeah, like Dr. Dre was like, I really need you to like, there actually is a Beats, I can't remember what it says, but I noticed this on Saturday. There's actually a Beats, the Beats logo and like some saying is actually the wraparound wallpaper on top of like the above the ceiling in the Cavs locker room. Like it's weird. They're all wearing fanny packs now too. That's another thing that's going on right now. NBA is so weird. Like it's a
to
weird
be a
league.
Rich young man. To be a rich young man in this world.
Yeah, if
be able to rock a fanny pack.
Breaking news, a Gucci fanny pack in J.R. Smith's case. In shocking news, young media professionals do not make enough money to rock Gucci fanny packs. But if you made it this far, props to you. But this has been Locked On Cavs for January 30th. Kellen, it's been good to have you. We're going to have you back on. We'll work on the phone connection and figure out next time. But thanks for being the plug on this Locked On Cavs episode.
Thank you for inviting me. I hope you guys enjoyed the very raspy, very bad phone connection from my Brooklyn apartment.
Yeah, shouts to Brooklyn phone connection. Find Kellen on Twitter at Kellen Becoats. That is KellenBecoats. So you can find him on Twitter there. Find his writing at Sports Illustrated. We'll be back tomorrow. Recap of Cavs Pistons. LeBron will probably have something to say about that Blake trade. I'm sure we'll see how Dwayne Wade looks when he gets back. And we'll see if Isaiah is still grumpy about life come Wednesday. But we'll talk to you then. And thank you for listening.